There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 947, July 11th, 2022, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Ferrari on fire and gets the victory despite deep throttle issues, and Yuki gets the finger in a sea of orange flares. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Toto shocked at F1 fan behavior. Leclerc feeling the love. Fernando keeps waving his finger and fighting till the end. Vettel now taking on brake dust. And this week's interviews are, please pay attention, we got J.P. Morey, sponsored by Buzzballs, the second interview with Matt Christensen, and I just want to remind everybody, we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab, you know, you want to. And I have an announcement, and this is on behalf of people who love Lewis Hamilton and would like to a sleepover at Mercedes AMG Petronas. Well, I've got it together, folks. AMG Petronas and 8 Sleep have partnered, and they're offering one lucky winner a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And for the first time ever, they're going to get to spend the night inside the headquarters of the Mercedes AMG Petronas Formula One team in Brackley in England on October 8th. So all you need to do is go to 8sleep.com, search for the link to enter the contest, and that link will also be available on our front page when we publish this podcast. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Thank you. How are things on the left coast?
The left coast is very hot and warm, but it's a dry heat.
Wow, just like Arizona.
Exactly, our favorite place.
And as you know, there is no coastline in Austria, but Charles Leclerc is now, after a long wait, swimming in a sea of Tifosi love. Did you like that, sir?
I did. The orange smoke, I think, is gone overboard. What is wrong with these Dutch people? The French don't do this. They just sit down, empty canon. Un verre de vin, peut-être. Un morceau de fromage et puis du saucisson. That's it. So, you know, the Dutch, they got to knock it off, and it's pissing people off. And apparently they were abusive to all the LCH, how would you say it, fashion lovers.
Yes, the Austrian Grand Prix is getting quite a bit of negative press for, you know, it only takes a few bad apples to spoil anybody's party. Like Sebastian Vettel said, these fans should be banned forever. I say that if you cannot behave in public, stay home. But sir, you know, these kind of issues happen at major sporting events. Not saying it's the right thing, but what can you do? But I think, you know, when things just, you know, there's a limit to anything and everything. I think once you start pushing over the limit, Johnny Law will come into effect sooner or later. But sir, we have to talk major racing. It was, I would say, walk in the park for Charles Leclerc in Melbourne in round 3. And now in round 11, he finally gets his third win of the season. The pasta and performance was nail-biting, especially in the closing laps, but still finger-licking good. And could have been very easily Ferrari 1-2 had it not been for some fire in the cucina late in the race. And I have a question for you, Mr. Rogers. Who was that third man on the podium for the third time in a row? I've seen that face before.
Yep, and that fake smile from Toto when the camera was on him and he knew that Hamilton would be P3 and he had that wry smile. Oh, yes, it was pretty good stuff. No, I'm happy for Hamilton to watch. What's great is they're transitioning from the LCH era to the new era. I mean, he's there, and it's sort of surreal for him because he's watching the future. I mean, Max and Leclerc both in their early 20s. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating for him, and it's fascinating for us because we're watching the transition of an era. Instead of just dropping out and being missing, Lewis is going to slowly fade away like a good soldier.
Before number 8?
Oh, you know, he could get 8 or 9. But I hate to say this, and I know it's going to be a shock, but you cannot stop Father Time.
Well, that's very true. But, you know, if you put him in the right package...
The package!
He will deliver. I'm still hopeful of a victory this year for him, even though I won't be sleeping in the Brackley headquarters. But I still would like to see him get a win this year. And then hopefully Mercedes can give him a competitive car and we can have a 3 or 4 way battle for the championship in 2023. But sir, shall we do our usual quickie on calling?
Absolutely. Just leave the white powder at home.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, you know, Nigel Stepney has passed away, so I don't want to use his name. But anyway, Colley was the story. How the season has been, rain or shine, snow or sleet, Max delivers. Prancing horses in hot pursuit. The Mercedes drivers were on the Boris Pickett program and both ended in monster mash. Well, that was a surprise, I have to say. The positive is Silver Arrows are picking up the pace and we may have a victory for Lewis and George in our lifetime. Sir, were you surprised that both the Mercedes went into the wall of voodoo?
No, but I heard that the Dutch fans enjoyed it.
And who can blame them?
Exactly. It's a sporting event. I mean, what kind of... You know, the problem is Toto, you know, he's up there in culture, being a member of the Vienna Opera House and all that. And he doesn't understand raw, evil, disgusting... competition. So, yeah, it can get pretty dirty down in the bowels.
Yeah, but you know, high society like that do not understand the behavior of poor people of, or the passion and behavior of poor people of Paris and poor people of Pacoima. It's a different crowd.
Indeed.
And sir, who would have thought a day would come when names like Alonso and Hamilton will qualify behind names like Ocon, Kevin Magnussen, and Mick Schumacher. Folks, welcome to the new world order. Supposedly kinder and gentler and very sensitive, but still pretty ruthless out on the track. Sir, sprint race. Are you enjoying these sprint races?
Well, we have so few of them. Yeah, I mean, when they happen, if you got to stay on your toes. Qualifying is on Friday, then the sprint race, which sets up the order for the race. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I mean, I have to admit, Max dominated all 23 laps. The Ferraris looked good. It was exciting.
Yes, and you know, Machismo, your man, was victim of escargot culture on the grid. Someone left the cake out in the rain at MacArthur Park. At the Red Bull Ring, someone left the blankets on the tire. Not the first time this has happened in Formula One. And then we had Swiss fondue fallout on the Sauber Alfa Romeo of Guan Yu Zhu. And it's really very nice to see this Chinese driver back in racing after his big smash at Silverstone. Third time's the charm. The dueling prancing horses was the main excitement as Max galloped away to victory. Easy like Sunday morning, even though the sprint race took place on Saturday. Now, how the mighty hybrid have fallen. This was very, very sad. Lap after lap, LCH tried so hard to pass the Haas car of Mick Schumacher, finally passing him and getting 1 point from his 8th place finish. What a day Lewis is seeing these days. This only proves that if you put Mick Schumacher in a competitive car, he may not go like Papa, but will be able to accomplish as much as Papa's puppy, the two-legged Rubinho. Sir, looking at the sprint race, were you impressed by Mick Schumacher's performance?
I was. All of a sudden, he seems like he's discovered machismo-ness. I'm telling you, all of a sudden, maybe that fire under the bum helped. Apparently, he's hanging around LCH a lot. Maybe he's trying to learn or something. But it's funny. It's pretty bizarre stuff. But Mick kicking ass, I mean, in the race as well. I was really happy for him. And I was happy for his mom and his family.
And speaking of the race, the main race on Sunday, it was no surprise Max grabbing the lead at the start from pole position. Now, of course, having dominated the sprint race, did you think that this is going to be rinse and repeat in the feature race also?
I did. I mean, how could you not? Set the tone, and you could see the straight line speed, but the Ferraris are fast as well. It was very exciting. I enjoyed this race thoroughly. Fernando mixing it up, Schumacher, Magnussen, Ocon. I mean, it was laughs.
Yes, you know, I have to agree with you. I also thought that this will be a Max Verstappen, if not a big lead, but he's going to keep on going and winning the race. And the other Red Bull going into the kitty litter was a surprise on the opening lap after a left tap from George Russell. And that pretty much ruined their chances of appearing on the podium, which looked very likely and possible for both and highly likely for Checo. Checo is coming on strong too. By lap 10, and this is when I said, okay, maybe we have a race here. By lap 10, Charles was all over Max like, to borrow a phrase from Mr. David Hobbs, like a cheap suit. And only 2 laps later, he was looking like a sharp-dressed man in an Armani suit leading the race and looking for his first Grand Prix win since the Australian Grand Prix. As king of karma, Julian Palmer said on the telly, Leclerc driving with aggression and determination. In fact, he has not even been on the podium in the previous 5 races. Missing out on the podium in 5 races does not look like somebody who's going to go and win the championship. But it's halfway through the season. We still have 11 races to go. A lot of points available, so we'll see how it goes. Lap 13 of 71, Max was in the pits for tire change. Question was, will he do 2 stops and the prancing horses only 1? I was very surprised when he came into the pits on lap 13. Did that surprise you, Chief?
Well, there are things going on with the Red Bull that are very interesting, but when Max is under pressure, the tires go quickly, and we've seen it a couple of times in previous races. We saw it twice in this race. And the other thing is when Max loses what he had at the beginning of the race, it's very hard for him to continue at that same pace. Whereas Leclerc, with all the issues after the Sainz kablamo and the problems he had with his Ferrari and the determination he did not want to let this race go. It was awesome. It was great to watch. I loved it. But there is a little, we've seen this happen again. And Red Bull has a weakness there. Max has a weakness. Leclerc has been studying and doing his homework. And I think we're going to see Ferrari surge a little bit as we go to France.
Well, lap 26, Charles came into the pits. And when Carlito came in the following lap, it put Max back on top, which is what he enjoys. The pace of the leading prancing horse was very good and Charles quickly closed in on Max again. Gap between the two on lap 30 was 3.4 seconds. On lap 33, the red Ferrari was again ahead of Red Bull number 33. You know, Clark, I have to say it's very rare to see Max pass by a driver for the lead in a race, but Charles did that 3 times on Sunday and that was very, very impressive. And the second Ferrari of Sainz Jr. was less than 3 seconds behind Max. At the end of lap 36, Max was back in the pits and we now had a Ferrari 1-2, which is never a bad sight, to be honest with you. A very magical name in world of motor racing. Now, around the same time, Yuki put Nando on the green, green grass of Austria, and Machismo gave Tsunoda the global sign of, you are numero uno. What is this world coming to, Mr. Rogers? Hamilton hustling with Mick Schumacher, and Alonso with Tsunoda. Amazing. Lap 40, we had Sebastian Vettel on a sandy beach for a brief moment, blaming it on Pierre Gasly. With 30 laps to go, Leclerc had a 20-second lead over Max with teammate Carlito as a cushion between the two. Lap 50 of 71, Leclerc was back in pits for a fresh set of Pirellis, followed by his teammate, once again, Max back on top. Red Bull Ring is the shortest track in Formula One, so game was on for a mad dash for cash till the end. Only 3 laps later, Charles was back in charge. Lap 55, Carlito was within striking distance of Max and win, and things were looking good for Ferrari. 2 laps later, we heard him moaning, no, 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 as smoke and fire erupted from the red-hot Ferrari. VSC, virtual safety car, with about a dozen laps to go, meant hold your horses and gave Max one last chance to pounce on the prancing horse leading the race. As soon as, by the way, when this last restart happened, did you think Max will win the race or had a chance to win?
I did, of course, but, you know, that determination in Leclerc and his voice, he cannot, there was just no way this guy was going to suffer a 6th race without a win. I mean, it was just awesome stuff. I loved it.
As soon as the race went green, Max almost got a gift of victory when Leclerc reported more than once of sticky throttle. First, I thought this was just a ploy. Max was able to cut the 4-second gap in half, but Leclerc kept his cool, and instead of asking the team, do something please, as he did in Silverstone, he took matters in his own hands, nursing the car and making no mistakes, which was very impressive. Max kept the pressure as encouraged by team radio, but had to settle for second best. Long time coming, but a well-deserved victory for Leclerc. And this is now back-to-back wins for Scuderia Ferrari, and this is their first win in Austria since the Red Baron in 2003. So they have gone long, long time without winning at the Red Bull Ring. Very, very interesting. So, sir, the question I have for you, is Ferrari back in town now? Do you think they can win a couple of races in the next 3 races, and next thing you know, he's only 5 points behind Max? Is that possible?
It is possible. They've switched. No more Italian cuisine. They're going strictly Mexican. The in-flight burritos are on. They're deep frying them, making it nice and fatty. Yeah, I think they're figuring it out. They're on a roll. Not only that, but, you know, the frustration and the desperation and the suggestions from Leclerc, I'm sure, have helped the team to pick it up. And he's proved it. The kind of effort he put into that race picks up a team, you know, like the tide lifts little boats.
What would be interesting, you know, if, let's just say in the next few races, both Ferrari have the upper hand on Red Bull, and then if there's a race where Carlos Sainz gets the pole or gets ahead in the race with like 20% of the race to go and Leclerc is running second, will there be a Leclerc is faster than you, can you confirm the message situation? Or will they engineer some sort of a slow pit stop, like Massa in Brazil in 2007, so the other Ferrari can win? What do you think that, how that thing will pan out?
It's really simple. They already have it all set up. There's not going to be any messages or anything because they want to keep that low key. So on his steering wheel, there will be some graphics. And as soon as the picture of Rubinho comes up, he knows, aha, it's time to let Leclerc by, because Leclerc is numero uno. Rubinho is the book that he was handed, and that's just the way it is. And even Leclerc said, I don't want to be fighting with Sainz. I got a world championship to win here. So even, you know, I hate to say it, but everybody thinks that Leclerc is Mr. Uno.
Well, he has been in terms of performance this year so far.
Exactly. So that justifies everything. He is quicker than science. He knows that. And it's really fast and subliminal. They flash it to him. You know, Rubinho. As soon as he sees the Rubinho, he'll let him by. And there'll be no chaos because he has been hypnotized.
Hypnotized, but which is a very nice song from Fleetwood Mac. But we move on to Max. He will always whip his Red Bull to his name. But I think he drove a very smart and sensible race and did not get involved in any argy-bargy or brake testing with the Red Ferrari. Finishing second on your bad day is much better than losing 25 points, which Carlito did, no fault of his own. So I think it's still game on. We still have a lot of races to go. Definitely advantage because of the big lead. I think Max is leading by 38 points, if I'm not mistaken. So that's a pretty nice cushion, but things can turn around very quickly in Formula One, as we have seen. Now we come to the third man on the podium, Lewis Hamilton. The halcyon days of hybrid era domination are fast becoming days of yore. Also over are days of teammates who are finish items. Through orange haze, he came through to get on the podium, more than half a minute behind race leader. Podium is good, but this kind of pace is not very inspiring. But I am still hoping we may have a bizarre race or a bizarre end to a race or a race in heavy rain where Mr. Lewis Hamilton will shine. Time will tell. George Russell IV, the new number one at the old number one team, could have been on the podium. But playing let's get physical with Perez on the opening lap cost him a 5-second penalty, and he had to settle for fourth behind teammate. Fifth, Esteban Ocon. He was in his 100th Grand Prix start and finished fifth. This was his best finish of the season. He has scored points for the team in 8 of 11 races so far. He was very happy in the post-race show with Will Buxton. Alpine is now fourth in the Constructors' Championship, and next race is the home Grand Prix in the south of Francia. So that's all very good. Now we come to what a lot of people are calling driver of the day, Mick Schumacher. He was sixth. The second coming of Schumi is living up to his reputation, coming on strong in the second year in the series. That was his MO in Formula 2 and Formula 3. In both series, he was nowhere to be found in the first season, and then the second season he came on very strong to win both championships.
Different compared to yesterday, today. Obviously, knowing that we had to take care about the car, tires and stuff. But then, quite soon in the race, I felt that it wasn't going to be a one-stop race just because of the way the tires were behaving. The winds were very different and very difficult to manage because they were very much crosswind in every quick corner. So, it was tough out there, but a lot of fun.
Well, he won't be world champion in 2022. But this kind of performance, and more importantly, finishing ahead of his teammate, is a good boost for new motivation and papa-like determination to make it big in the world of Formula One, a very deep and highly politically charged piranha pool. So we wish Mick Schumacher all the best. Seventh, Lando Norris. The papaya cars have not been the fast McLaren cars that won many championships. But the boy from Bristol has scored points in 8 of 11 races, which is not bad. His best finish was 3rd at Imola, the San Marino Grand Prix. K-Mac, 8th. The comeback kid at Haas F1 is the Lawrence Taylor of Formula 1 when it comes to defensive driving. This was the second race in a row where he finished behind his, up till now, under his shadow teammate Mick Schumacher. But things are looking good for the Danish driver as he seems to be a keeper for the North Carolina-based team. And as we all know, both the driver and team leader seem to enjoy flowery language. Now we come to an interesting situation. Daniel Ricciardo, 9th. After scoring no points in the previous two races in England and Canada, the smiling assassin picked up 2 points by finishing 9th on Sunday. Rumors and vultures are still circulating over his seat at McLaren. Young American talent Colton Herta is testing a year-old McLaren at Portimão in Portugal this week. I believe it's Monday, Tuesday. But I will be very surprised if Zak Brown will replace Ricciardo with Colton. But in Formula One, you never know. Colton is well-connected with the Steinbrenner family of New York Yankees fame and may have a fistful of dollars to bring to the team. And sir, you know, Steinbrenner family has extensive, let's say, operation and holdings here in Tampa, Florida. I see their name everywhere. Now we come to the final point from 10th. Nando El Machismo. The old man of the sea keep on sailing on a rudderless Santa Maria in search of the promised land where he will find his third championship. He now has scored points in the last six races. Alpine desperately needs sponsorship from UPS or FedEx, so they have a package in which Nando can deliver some wins and that elusive third championship. Sir, do you have any inside line if he is signing up to stay in Formula One for a few more years with Alpine?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be Alpine, but he is going to stay in for a few more years. He wants to hang out with LCH so they can talk about the old times and laugh together about Tsunoda and Ocon and the laughs they had in the mid-pack with Schumacher. And yeah, it's going to be great stuff, dude. They're going to be hugging and kissing. I'm sure Lewis got his free camping chair by now. So yeah, the future is going to be, yeah, but Fernando's not going to leave. He's got those special vitamins. And you know what they say, Wilbur.
Yeah, but you know, you said that you don't know where he will go. The only place where he's wanted now in Formula One is Alpine, unless he want to be hanging out with Gunther Steiner at Haas, which I seriously doubt.
Listen, if it's up to me, stay home, Fernando. There's a lot of good hobbies you could pick up. It's a great lifestyle.
Yes, I agree with you on that one, sir. Anything you liked about the race? Anything you did not like?
I loved everything about the race. The race was exciting. I watched it a few times. I enjoyed it. I liked that competition. And to be honest with you, I like Ferrari's attitude where performance is more important than reliability. Look at the excitement they're bringing because, you know, they're right there on the edge. The car should last one lap longer than the race. That's what I think about all F1 cars. And some of these dependable cars are boring. They go round and round and round. And they don't compete. There's no performance. It's stinko. Whereas Ferrari, it's right there on the edge. One blows up. Leclerc has to nurse this one back. You know, we've seen these great, great championship racers limp the car home and win.
The race winner, Charles Leclerc.
I'm very happy, obviously. It's been five races that I keep coming to the track, I keep smiling and you keep being optimistic, but obviously it's been very, very difficult on the other hand to just have races after races, some disappointments, no? So to finally show our pace, to finally win another race is feeling particularly good. But obviously we need to look at what happened on Carlos' side because reliability is still a problem and we need to get on top of it.
That's what I want to see. And that's why I thought this was a great Grand Prix. Right on the edge. The competition was fierce. This is what we were supposed to be getting from Formula One.
Yes, sir. And before we go into Motorsport Mondial, I have to ask you your favorite question. Who will win the next race, the French Grand Prix at Paul Ricard at Le Castellet?
A lot of people want to win. Gasly wants to win. Ocon wants to win. Fernando wants to win, but he keeps getting escargot instead of the salade niçoise. So there's a problem in the kitchen. But no, it's going to be exciting, and I want a Ferrari one too. Whether it's Leclerc or Sainz, it's up in the air, but it's going to be exciting. But I think Alpine is going to be competitive and exciting, and we'll see. Fernando, maybe LCH, cutting it up, fifth, sixth. Very fun. Yep, we're going to have a great, great, great Grand Prix. I hope everybody's shopping right now. You got to get your merguez, your maroilles, your camembert, your pain d'épices. I'm telling you, there's a lot of preparation before the French Grand Prix.
Very good, very good. Did I hear Olivier Panis, or was that some French novelty?
that was Pandipis, not Olivier Panis. But if we were going to Monaco, I would call Olivier anytime for his very, very well-made tapenade. So anyway, on that note, you know, now I'm getting hungry. We've got, once again, more Provence hors d'oeuvres in the fridge in the Palatial Studios. So we'll be back after a quick snack.
Hi, this is Mika Häkkinen, double Formula One world champion. All the best for the readers, F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Rogers, as you know, the world go around, powered by money. So this conversation is with Mr. J.P. Morey. He is based out of Washington, D.C., and he is involved with Hunkos Racing, and he is a sponsor hunter, man who goes looking for money so people can go racing. So I would like to thank him very much. We met recently at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway during the 500 race there, and then we hooked up again at Mid-Ohio. And I want to thank him for his time and sharing his story and experiences. So please enjoy this conversation with Mr. J.P. Morey, and we shall return.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Mid-Ohio on a sunny day with a gentleman who hopefully soon will be J.P. Morgan of sponsorship, Mr. J.P. Morey. J.P., good to see you again. How are you?
Nasser, great to be with you again. Love meeting you in Indianapolis, and now here we are. And another place, Mid-Ohio. It's great to be here with you.
Buddha bless your heart. I hardly hear somebody say to me, good to see you again. So thank you so much. Okay, you are in the sponsorship hunting business.
Yeah.
As they say in this business, racing costs money. How fast you want to go? Definitely you can go 55. How crowded is the left lane when you look for money in a society where the big three are football, baseball, and basketball?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. What the main thing that I've seen is a lot of the typical brands, large brands that, and companies that everybody listening to this would be familiar with, they've been touched so many times. They've been spoken to by every single major league sport. One of the things that we're trying to do, especially with Hunkos Hollinger Racing, being a smaller upstart team, first year in full season, is looking for those medium to large companies that may not have been in the sport before or may have some reasons to entertain their clients and things like that. And we want to be unique for them.
Speaking of this team, Hunkos Hollinger, how did you hook up with them? You call them or they call you?
Yeah, so I'd been involved with the Vassar Sullivan team with Dale Coyne for a number of years as a sponsor myself. So I saw the value of motorsport sponsorship and what it can do for a brand.
Yeah.
And when they chose to go into sports car full-time and not have an IndyCar team, I said, my goodness, I've enjoyed this so much. Maybe there's a team that could utilize my experience in business development. So I called Ricardo directly and said, would you like someone to help you out with sponsorships? And a few short weeks later, we got started right after Long Beach.
Very good. Okay, in American motorsports, NASCAR is the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah.
Do you experience when pitching open-wheel racing that potential sponsors are more interested in that series? And who can blame them?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we're in an interesting dynamic right now. Obviously, they run so many races, and their field is, you know, at some case, 40-some cars, and the car's bigger. It's a billboard, and it's going a lot slower than we are. So there are some structural challenges to compete with that series, but I also believe that a company has valued motorsports in some way, that IndyCar in particular can be a very good value play. Because if you fewer races to sponsor. Obviously, technology companies are very attuned to what we do. So I think we've got a lot of strengths, and we can be a little bit more flexible than maybe the big NASCAR teams. Not to say they don't do a great job, but we're different. We're a different series. I think we got a different value proposition.
Now, I'm a lifelong Formula One junkie, and I remember at one time there was names like Penthouse and Durex on Formula One cars. Does that give you some ideas to bring in new names here?
Yeah, I think what you've always seen in this series is that companies that have business-to-business opportunities, many times the cars and the teams, we're using technology, we're using fuel, we're using lubricants. Those kinds of companies that are doing business with our teams are a great fit as sponsors as well. So I think, and I think this series is growing with great leadership under Roger Penske. That meant, here's the other thing, Nasser. TV ratings, attendance up double digits. Man, we've got a lot to offer a sponsor, no doubt.
Okay, Netflix and Liberty Media have let the dogs out in terms of F1 popularity all over the world. Is there any evidence of this when you reach out and touch someone in the marketing department of AT&T and other corporate behemoths?
Yeah, 100%. I'll give you an example today. Can't tell you who the company is, but we're entertaining an executive here at this Mid-Ohio race. Their CEO is currently at the British Grand Prix. When they start to see motorsports and the popularity of motorsports overall, I really do believe the tide can lift all boats, and we're one of the boats in that ocean, and I think we're a good North American option for sure for companies interested in motorsports.
You know, I'm a big believer in trickle-down theory, so if you get a big sponsor, trickle down a few cents and dollars to F1 Weekly.
Yeah, happy to do that. Whatever's left over, Nasser, we'll make sure you get a piece of it.
Thank you so much. Now you know the reason for the interview. Thank you. Okay, this day and age, the PC bandwagon is traveling full speed on the Autobahn and the Eisenhower Highway system. In your experience, have you noticed potential sponsors inquiring about gaining an extra exposure, potential by backing a lady driver or a driver from underrepresented ethnic background?
You know, I also work with a young lady that is a dirt car driver in the USAC Midget Series. Her full-year sponsor is a woman-owned company. And the first thing, that was the attraction, first and foremost. And then the racing came second, and they've enjoyed now their second full year. So absolutely.
Name of the driver and sponsor, please.
Yeah, let's give them a plug. It's an extraordinary young lady named Taylor Reimer, USAC National Midget Series. She was a former cheerleader at the University of Oklahoma. Her sponsor is Buzz Balls, pre-made cocktails made in Fort Worth, Texas.
Buzz Balls sponsoring a lady. Why am I not surprised?
And you ought to see the car. It's pink. It pops. It looks great. And they've activated that brand at the racetrack and at the convenience stores around the tracks, and they've seen sales go through the roof. They're up 20% this year alone, I think.
Having a cheerleading background, does she go after every is, oh my God, yeah, it was so awesome?
Yeah. Actually, her signature, she's the winningest driver at Port City Raceway in Tulsa in the micro sprints. And her signature move is a backflip off the top of the car. So I can't wait to do that at somewhere like Terre Haute, Indiana, or maybe Indianapolis Motor Speedway someday. That'll get a lot of attention.
Is she related to Carl Edwards?
She is not. Maybe she learned it from him, though, because it's about that era.
Okay, next question, Senor. IndyCar budget for a decent ride, I think, is like $5 million or more. What will be main selling points for this kind of spend in motor racing over NFL or a personal services contract with high-profile athletes like Aaron Rodgers or Steph Curry? I am thinking Tom Brady or Michael Jordan would be in a higher bracket. That's the Robbie Gordon Truck Series.
I love the sound of those trucks. They put on a great show, by the way. I love it when they're supporting the IndyCar Series. It's a great, great event. You know, I think This is still a sport that's about people. We're fortunate in with this team to have Callum Ilott, who has an international following. But I tell you what, if you've got a driver and other people involved with the team that attract attention, that's good for the team. To be honest with you, Ricardo Juncos has a great following in Latin America, and Brad Hollinger has an incredible following in the healthcare sector. So those are demographics and companies that we're trying to find fits for at our team. So it always helps to have great people around the team.
Absolutely. I have always heard airlines don't want to be associated with the sport where the highlights are crashes, but yeah. I do recall Piedmont Airlines sponsoring Terry Labonte. It will be very cool if you can land airline sponsorship for your team. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I think airlines, I think there are a lot of different sectors that have navigated motorsports and its daring nature and sometimes danger a little bit differently. Alcohol is one of them. There are some brands that embrace, obviously, racing, very high-profile way. There are others that say, you know, responsibility is such a big part of what we do. We don't like the image of alcohol with high-speed racing. So I think that's something that every company has to navigate on their own.
With the global appeal of F1, I'm very surprised names like Coke, Pepsi, McDonald's, Starbucks are not in Grand Prix racing. You mentioned healthcare industry. Apart from these, is there a sector or industry you would like to bring into racing which could be the first time for them?
Actually, to be honest with you, I've had some conversations over the last several weeks with a couple of the companies that you mentioned. And I think all of these deals take time. And to build the relationship, and to be totally candid, this is a series that has momentum but is building itself up again. So in a lot of ways, we kind of need to reintroduce the series and IndyCar racing and open wheel racing, if you will, to those big brands, because I do think it's valuable and can activate customers and loyalty.
You know, I think if your company pays $5 million for IndyCar racing, and if they have a decent, well-known name as a driver, just one race in the 500 pays it back with the global exposure.
And I think here's another thing here. I think people have some assumptions that IndyCar budgets are the same as Formula One budgets, and it's not even close. So some of these brands may think that it costs X amount when it really could cost Y amount to get started and get great value for their brand.
Okay. Now, I know you're a very humble gentleman, so I reserve this question as last. Okay, you previously worked for U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and according to President Calvin Coolidge, the business of America is business, to which I say, no shit, Sherlock. Can you tell us a little bit about that work experience and what other things you have done?
Yeah, so we got started at the U.S. Chamber, the world's largest business federation, and there I worked on sponsorships as well as membership and business relationships with local chambers and associations, and it really kind of evolved to today. So now I'm in IndyCar, and an association is on the side of that car as their primary sponsor. So the one thing that I've learned through all those experiences, you've got an excited fan in the background. One of the things I've learned through those experiences is that relationships can last forever and never burn a bridge. If you keep at it, you can have some business success, and we've been fortunate to be with great organizations and people that have enabled that to happen. And so that's really why I'm so pleased to be here now.
And final question, what part of the country are you from, and where are you based?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Oklahoma. My family made the Oklahoma land run during the 89. We were 89ers, but I've lived in Washington, D.C. for almost 35 years now. And I've been in the association business and close to D.C. types of companies for a very long time.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, NASA.
JP, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Yes, sir. Let's talk a little bit more of action from the Red Bull Ring. Formula 2 and Formula 3 were in action. Formula 2 Saturday sprint race winner was victim of Dr. Marco's tainted love from New Zealand, Marcus Armstrong. Second was French driver Theo Pourchaire, with winner from Silverstone Jack Doohan third. Well, future race was interesting. Winner from Netherlands, Richard Forshoe, another victim of Dr. Marco's tainted love. Jahan Daruwala from Mumbai, India was second with Logan Sargent from Boca Raton, FLA in the USA, third man on the podium. Now that was on the road. Do you know what they say? Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, and that's what happened here. Richard Forshoe stopped on the track after taking the checkered flag, just like LCH after setting the pole in Barcelona some years ago. Running on empty means not enough fuel sample for FIA, which means instant disqualification. For sure, this caused victory for Richard Forshoe. Daruwala thought he had the win. Then the stewards put some spice in his mango lassi, and he was given a 20-second penalty for a technical infringement by the team. Apparently, one of the team members tried to dry the surface at his on his grid position, which is against the rules and regulation. So Sargent got the win and moves into second in the championship with 115 points. The championship leader is still Brazilian driver Felipe Drugovich on 154. Like I said, Logan is 115, and just 1 point behind is this very talented French kid Theo Pourchaire on 114. There has never been a Brazilian or American GP2/F2 champion. Pierre Gasly is the only French driver to win at this level. Some may argue that Romain Grosjean also won this championship, which is true, but then he started out his racing life as a Swiss driver and then became French driver when he joined the Renault Driver Academy. And it must be said his mother is French and papa is Swiss. As one Grand Prix winning French driver once said to me, Romain Grosjean is not a French driver. Bruno Michel wants him to be a French driver. And that was when, you know, they were trying to get a French driver into the Renault F1 team. And that's what I call the politics of dancing and racing. The baby sister to Formula 2 is Formula 3. Saturday winner was what Chris Berman would call the Texan Terror. Jack Crawford, also known as Jetpack, he is keeping himself in good graces with Dr. Marco by winning. Remaining steps of the podium had a samba and tango beat. Caio Collet from Brazil second. He is managed by Nicola Todd, and Franco Colapinto from Argentina was third. The race on Sunday was won by Algerian French driver Isaac Hadjar. He is doing a very good job, and he is in the Red Bull Driver Academy. And you know, he is a Algerian-French driver, and back in the day, we had a very fast driver who died very young. His name was Guy Moll. He was French-Algerian, and this was a guy who won the Monaco Grand Prix and was remembered by, of all the people, by Mr. Enzo Ferrari as one of the greatest racing talents. So we wish all these young guns and the old guns all the best and hope you have a great season, safe season, and may the best driver win. And talking of best driver and young talent, sir, now we present a conversation with young American talent from Orlando, Florida, Matt Christensen. I got in touch with his father, Chris, and I would like to thank both of them for the time. And this conversation took place at their residence in Orlando, Florida. Matt is racing in the U.S. Formula 4 Championship, doing very good, and we wish him all the best. And I hope our listeners enjoy this conversation with this young, talented driver. Thank you.
My name is Matt Christensen, and you're listening to the Palatial Studios of F1 Weekly.
Okay, folks, I'm here in Orlando, FLA, with a young man working hard to establish his own magical racing kingdom, Matt Christensen. Matt, good to see you. How are you today?
Good to see you too. How are you? I'm good.
I'm always good. Today we had sprint race, and talking to young, talented drivers like you is something I really enjoy. First question, how did you get the racing bug? Was it from your mom and dad or playing Gran Turismo?
Well, it was from my dad. My dad did motocross when he was little, like my age, and then my neighbor started go-karting, and he told us to come out to the track and try it out, and like the minute I got in the go-kart, I just fell in love with the sport.
Okay. Now, Orlando is less than an hour from Daytona. What was the attraction that put you in racing
where cars are turning right and left and not going round and round.
Yeah, I've been to the Daytona 500 a couple times, and when I was little, I would always play with, like, toy Matchbox cars, and I'd always watch racing, so it's always been, like, a dream of mine.
But any reason you gravitated towards road racing, not oval racing?
Well, we started go-karting, and normally if you start go-karting, you normally go to, like, F4 or, like, open wheel, stuff like that, and that's what I wanted to do.
Okay, and we'll talk about F1 in a minute here. Okay, 9 years old, you discovered karting. Was it love at first sight and drive, or took time to develop passion for karting?
It was love at first sight. Like, the second I got in the kart, I wanted to keep going back over and over again, and I'd beg my dad to take me.
And what was the biggest thrill, the competition, the speed, or the noise?
It was just the speed and the noise and just the feeling when you're in the kart, like being one with it.
Okay. Give us a little background on your karting career. How long were you there? Did you ever race in Europe? And any moments you cherish most?
Well, I started karting when I was like 9, and then for like a couple years we just like practiced locally at Orlando Kart Center, and then we started doing some local events, and then we like won a couple local championships, and then when I was about 12 or 13 I started like racing on a national level doing like SCUSA, USPKS, and we got like a couple podiums doing USPKS and SCUSA, and then when I was like 14 we decided to move to cars, and we did the Lucas Oil Series.
Okay. Now, that was, I believe, in 2020, you made a slick debut in single-seater racing with the Lucas Oil Racing Series, almost winning the championship. Did you surprise yourself by winning 6 races and 12 podium finishes from 18 races?
Yeah, like, the initial, like, goal was just to get experience by doing that. I didn't even think I'd be, like, in the championship fight. But then when we got there, I was really fast right off the start. And then we tried to fight for the championship, but in the end, it just wasn't enough. But still, 6 wins and 12 podiums was, like, way over my expectations.
Great. And what was the biggest difference you felt adjusting from karting to single-seater racing?
Well, I feel like in a go-kart, you're, like it feels faster. And, like, when you're in a car, everything's, like, slowed down more. But you're going faster. And I like cars a lot more than karts.
Okay. What were most memorable races for you and what tracks you raced on?
Probably New Orleans Motorsports Park, NOLA. I swept the weekend there at Lucas Oil. And then probably Road America this year in F4. I almost won all 3 races. I won 2, and then the last one I was like 3/10 off of winning. I would have swept the weekend.
Did you enjoy some Cajun food in Louisiana?
Yeah, I love the food there. It's a really nice track. New Orleans, I love that track.
Okay. This is your second year in U.S. Formula 4. You have 2 wins. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best, how will you rate your season so far?
I mean, it started off pretty good at NOLA. Like, we had the speed. We set the track record in qualifying and qualified first. But I felt like that weekend we just didn't have the luck. And then Road America went really good. We almost swept the weekend, won all 3 races. And then Mid-Ohio wasn't that great. So overall, I'd probably rate it like a 7 or 8 by now.
Now, at Road America, you had a great battle with Lockie Hughes, the Aussie kid. I think it was the first race. Tell our listeners about this race-long duel.
Yeah, it was a really good race, race 1 there. He went out on new tires, and I was still on old ones, so I knew it was going to be a fight with him, but I knew I could beat him. And me and him just pulled away from the rest of the field and got like a 4 or 5 second lead. And coming into Canada corner on the last lap, I went on around the outside of him and passed him and got the win.
Yeah, I was watching this on YouTube last night. Very, very impressive work. Now, if you had a choice, what will you prefer, taking the championship this year or winning more races than the driver who wins the championship?
Well, I definitely prefer winning the championship this year because like racing's so expensive, and if you get that scholarship, I think it's like more than half the money to go to the next level FR next year.
Okay. And that is coming through Honda?
Yeah.
Okay. As you are climbing the motorsport mountain, which is pretty cutthroat, we all know that, do you feel the competition level is getting harder and harder as you go higher?
Yeah, I feel like each level you move up, there's more competition and everyone's like similarly talented. And it's just like the gap between like the people who are up in the front and in the back isn't that big.
Okay, you're 4th in the championship right now. Who do you think would be your main battle with to grab the championship?
I think right now it's probably Bryson Morris because Lockie, he's like up and down. He's not that consistent. Like he got really lucky the first weekend at NOLA, and like when I crashed out the one race, he ended up winning because me and my teammate crashed out. And then he just, like, was in the right place at the right time. But Bryson has been really consistent. I think he's my main championship rival.
Okay. Your favorite track in the U.S.?
I'd probably say Road America.
Any other tracks?
I like Road America, I like NOLA, and I like COTA. Those are probably my top three.
Have you done any street races in single-seaters?
No, but I hope to. They look really fun.
Okay. What about ovals?
Nope, not that yet.
Okay. Looking forward to it?
Yeah.
Formula One is the pinnacle of motor racing. What is your game plan to one day race at Spa and Suzuka? Of course, hopefully in a F1 machinery.
Well, my plan is to go to FR next year. And if I do get an opportunity to race in Europe, of course I'd take it. Because, like, my dream has always been to go to F1. But right now my path seems to be, like, to get to IndyCar. Because there's more of a clear path for drivers in the U.S. Like, there's not that many drivers in the U.S. that are racing over there in Europe.
Logan Sargeant is also from Florida. Are you friends with him on Facebook, and have you asked for his advice on racing in Europe?
I haven't really talked to him, but I follow him on Instagram, and I know his friend Kyle Kirkwood. I used to, yeah. When I was racing go-karts, he was racing too.
Yeah, Kyle Kirkwood is pretty good. Have you asked him for some racing tips?
Yeah, I've talked to him here and there.
Okay. Now, when you first came into single-seater or even karting, and you said, you know, you were very quick, was it all pure natural talent, or did you ever employ a driver coach also who helped you to, you know, become more efficient?
Well, during karting, I don't think I was as good at karting as I was at cars. During karting, yeah, I had a driver coach. But, like, when I did the Lucas Oil Series, I didn't have a driver coach. I think it was just pure talent.
That's good. Looking ahead to 2023, if you had an opportunity to race on both sides of the pond, what series would you like to race? In the U.S., you already said Formula Regional. What about if you have an opportunity to race in Europe, what stepping stone would you like to tackle there first?
Well, I think a good series to run over there would probably be British F3, because that's what my teammate Nico is doing. He did 2 years of F4, and then he did some of FR this year, and now he's doing British F3, and he's doing pretty good over there.
What's his feedback, if any, in terms of competition there as what he raced here?
He said that the competition over there, there's more competition and everyone's a lot better. But he said, like, the racing over there is, like, a little more, like, dirty, sort of. And, like, the stewards don't, like, care as much as they do over here in the U.S.
So you're ready to battle one day like that?
Yeah,
down and dirty. Great. Do you have a favorite track in Europe or outside the U.S.?
I really like Spa. Spa's really nice. And Baku, the street circuit.
Yeah.
I really like that track too. And Silverstone. Those are probably my top three for Europe.
Have you been to any European tracks just as to visit or do anything?
Yeah. I went to watch the British Grand Prix at Silverstone.
When was this?
Around 4 or 5 years ago.
Did you enjoy
it? Yeah. It was so cool seeing the F1 cars.
Oh, yeah. How was the fish and chips?
Great. Food over there is nice.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, I was once at the Belgian Grand Prix Spa. That is Garden of Eden for motorsport. It is just absolutely gorgeous. And if you ever go there, and if you have time, just walk around the track. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, my friend Hunter Ganey, he's my teammate. He's been racing over in Europe, and he's been to Spa a few times, and he says it's just beautiful there.
Yeah, absolutely. Hunter Ganey was racing here last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he did FR here last year, and E-Pro.
What is he doing now?
FIA F3.
F3, okay, cool. Are you know, this American kid, Jack Crawford, are you friends with any of the, apart from these names we mentioned, like Jack Crawford?
I know Jack. I used to race go-karts with him.
Is he pretty good?
Yeah, he's pretty good, yeah. I think he's like top five or top three in the championship right now for F3.
Yeah, and I believe he won the race today.
Yeah, he won the sprint race.
Did you watch it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, cool. Yeah, me too. Okay, what else we have here? Formula One is my big passion. Our podcast is F1 Weekly. Who do you like in Formula One in terms of teams, and you have a favorite driver?
Well, I like Lewis Hamilton, like, since I was a kid, and I started watching up on Lewis Hamilton's always been my favorite, but I like Max Verstappen, too. I like his mentality.
And in terms of team, do you have a favorite team?
Probably Mercedes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Very nice. Okay, please tell our listeners how they can follow your career, your website, your social media accounts.
Well, on Facebook, you can just type in Matt Christensen Racing, and that's my Facebook. And then on Instagram, it's Matt Christensen with 2 underscores.
Okay, cool. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Matt, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Yes, sir. Anything else? Can you give us an update on what's happening in your favorite series,
Le NASCAR?
Well, you know, I've been watching the Camper Cup series, NASCAR, and it's really boring. It's crazy. They crash a lot. And over there, they love the crashing. Toto would hate NASCAR. But, yeah, I have no updates. It's terrible, terrible, terrible. But there was some good ARCA racing down south, and there was racing at Monza.
ARCA was racing at Monza?
Yes. No. You think you're pretty funny, don't you?
I think they were racing more like at Martinsville.
Monza, they had the... what was it? The WEC? Somebody was at Monza.
6 hours of Monza.
Yep. Loved it. It was exciting, Nasser.
And who won? Alpine?
Alpine. They win every year, when in my mind.
Oh, that's good. That's very good. Thanks to Mr. Rogers and F1 Weekly, I'm very pleased to say I've been granted a media pass for the Toronto IndyCar. So I am flying out on Friday. This coming Friday, of course. The race is on Sunday. So moi will be in Toronto pronto in the morning on Sunday. So look forward to this. It's a very popular IndyCar race. I think it's, apart from Indy, the second most popular IndyCar race behind Long Beach Grand Prix. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's a place, it's at a place called Exhibition Place or Exhibition Park. So we shall see, and hopefully we can get some interviews done. And especially with junior drivers, and then we will see how it goes. So I'll bring you a report on some Tim Horton donuts from O Canada.
Eh?
Exactly.
Well, that's going to be exciting. And Colton Herta, you know, he's going to be so pumped up after driving last year's McLaren at Portugal that he's going to think that, you know, now he's really, really the man. And yeah, he's going to dominate Toronto.
Speaking of Colton Herta, it was his papa, Brian Herta, who once drove a Minardi, and I don't remember exactly what he said, but basically he was more impressed by the worst car in Formula One than with the best car in IndyCar. So that's the beauty and magic of Formula Uno.
Yeah, when you go test a Formula One car, you get a free bag, and it's, I think, 3 changes of Depends.
Yes, and you need to see somebody who can take care of your neck pains. But I have to say this, you know, the way McLaren is right now, if he joins this team next year, it will be, you know, it's the famous saying, deja vu all over again. If he gets the McLaren seat, he will be teammate to Lando Norris. And Colton Herta race against Lando Norris in the 2005 British MSA Championship, which is now called the British Formula 4 Championship. I don't think it's a good idea to go with a team that's not competitive, because as we all know, and Nando can verify this, if you don't have the package, you're not going to deliver anything. You will deliver what David Hobbs called nothing but diddly squat. And going with the guy whom you've raced against, who is very talented, gelling with the team, I just don't see a good scenario for Colton with McLaren as they are right now. What say you?
So I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the program with my last words on this. And Colton Herta knows about GP2 engine, so he's going to come up with his own saying when he's at McLaren next year. But it's going to be Indy Lights engine.
Yes, very good. And we can leave that as the famous last words from Mr. Clark Rogers.
Thank you. Good night. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.